Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the TL Type S with a 286-horsepower V6 and real-time traffic alerts. Learn more at Acura.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point in Michigan. Mitt Romney finally struck gold.
Tonight marks the beginning of a comeback for America.
John McCain took silver and vowed to soldier on.
We've gotten pretty good at doing things the hard way, too, and I think we've shown him we don't mind a fight. We don't mind a fight, and we're in it.
Now the Republican action moves straight to South Carolina and the Democrats to Nevada, where they debated last night in Las Vegas, a little more gently.
Senator Obama and I agree completely that, you know, neither race nor gender should be a part of this campaign.
This hour, On Point, Republicans and Democrats head south and west on the long, hot road to the White House. You can join the conversation. Are you revved up and ready to go for a long primary season? South Carolina, what's the buzz? Romney, McCain, Huckabee, Thompson, and Latino voters. Will you speak for Obama or Clinton in this race? Or Edwards? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We began today with a closer look at the fresh results in Michigan. Jonathan Martin is senior political writer for The Politico. He was all over the Michigan voting yesterday, then hopped a plane to South Carolina, where he's traveling with Senator John McCain. He joins us now from Charleston. Jonathan, what happened in Michigan?
Well, I think what happened was that you had a candidate whose back was against the wall, who put in everything he had, and who finally found his footing. Now, Mitt Romney is somebody who has spent a lot of time during the course of this campaign talking about cultural issues, immigration, abortion, what have you. But, you know, where his passion really lies is talking about issues like jobs and the economy. That's sort of been his background before he was governor up there in Boston, and he was able to do that in Michigan. I spent an entire day with him on Saturday out there and wrote a story, and, you know, he really seemed more comfortable than I had ever seen him on the campaign trail, both in talking about the issues that he was in turning around the state's economy and in just relating to his audience and giving a stump speech. The fact is that Mitt Romney is not the most spontaneous politician in the world, but he finally seemed to let his hair down, as it were.
39% for Mitt Romney in the primary voting yesterday, 30 for McCain, 16 Huckabee, 6 Thompson, Giuliani with 3 down, just below Ron Paul. What does this say about the guys who came in second and third? McCain just had his triumph in New Hampshire. Now he's pretty far behind
right.
Mitt Romney. What went wrong with McCain's effort in Michigan?
Well, it says broadly that an already topsy-turvy race has now been thrown, you know, almost onto the verge of chaos. But let's take them one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
For McCain, if he had won last night and then won down here in South Carolina on Saturday, those back-to-back victories in short order would have made him a very, very formidable candidate going into Florida, where he probably could have locked up the nomination. Now we have a whole different ballgame. McCain really needs to get a victory here on Saturday in South Carolina, which, of course, was his Waterloo in 2000.
Yep.
To do so would erase any questions that he is a New Hampshire-centric candidate, which is to say that, you know, this is a guy who can go up to New Hampshire, spend a lot of time there, and appeal to that state's quirky voters, but he can't really take his game on the road. He has that chance on Saturday to do that. For Huckabee, you know, if he can't win in South Carolina, a state that is full of his fellow, you know, Southern Baptists and also evangelicals, mm-hmm. then where can he win?
Three primary contest, three different winners. Romney comes out of this one a winner, but the Wall Street Journal editorial page today saying, no standard bearer yet for the GOP. You say it's chaos out there. When does this thing start to congeal?
It's a political junkie's dream, that's for sure. I think what's going to happen is that you're going to see some more definition on Saturday after South Carolina. Huckabee and Thompson need to get wins here. If they can't succeed here in their native land, and especially in Huckabee's case, where it's a state full of evangelicals, then they're going to have a tough time doing so in Florida and beyond. So in that sense, I think we'll see some clarification after Saturday from those candidates. And then Florida will offer even more clarification. That's Rudy's make or break. He doesn't win there. He's out. So I think we're going to know a lot more after these next two contests heading into February 5th.
Mitt Romney saying in Michigan explicitly that he's the guy who can hold together the Reagan coalition,
right,
the values voters, Wall Street, and the national security vote.
Right.
Does Michigan prove that, or is it all about the rough economy there?
Well, you know, that remains to be seen. And the beauty of it is we're going to know here pretty fast, because these contests are coming in a rush. Look, I think there's no question that his being a native son and really addressing the economy up there helped his cause. But the fact is that he romped in exit polls among Republicans. He won by a wide margin. And that does help underscore his argument that he is someone who can appeal to Republicans. McCain needs to answer those doubts here on Saturday in South Carolina that he can only win where you've got a heavy Democratic and independent turnout.
Jonathan Martin with Politico today in Charleston, South Carolina. Jonathan, thanks for your coverage in Michigan, and on we go. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
With us now from Columbia, South Carolina, Blease Graham, professor of political science at the University of South Carolina. Blease Graham, welcome back to On Point.
Pleased to be here.
And from Las Vegas, Nevada, Jamal Simmons, Democratic strategist working with the Nevada Democratic Party, which co-sponsored last night's debate among the three Democratic candidates who made it on that stage. Sorry, Dennis Kucinich. Jamal Simmons, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Blease, first to you. The whole big freight train is headed straight at you now, Romney having taken Michigan. Is anything clear about how this may sort out in the South Carolina vote on Saturday?
I don't think immediately in the short run here, things are very clear. It's South Carolina's moment in the sunshine for Republicans, and it's going to be an interesting battleground to see if some of the clarification that Jonathan was suggesting might really be accomplished here. One of the interesting themes to me is going to be the contest between Governor Huckabee and Senator Thompson to see if Senator Thompson really can establish himself, perhaps as a third place or maybe even more ranked candidate in this state.
We'll look at those two. Of course, we've got the Republicans voting in South Carolina this weekend, and then the Democrats in South Carolina the following weekend. Nevada, with its own Democratic action, some less prominent Republican action on Saturday. What about John McCain? We saw him in New Hampshire and his victory there and the message that he brought there. Big military man in a big military state. From early readings, can you tell, is that working for him? Does it look like South Carolina is within his reach, Blease Graham?
Oh, I think it certainly is. I mean, as you point out, South Carolina is a state with a long militaristic tradition. In the current circumstance, a heavy defense establishment investment, a lot of retired veterans. Senator McCain has been here a long time, has an established organization, and I think is in a position to harvest his long-term investment here. So the prospects for Senator McCain here, I think, are quite bright.
And then, of course, there's Fred Thompson, who could just become a player. It might feel out of the blue, but he was very tough on Mike Huckabee in the debate down your way, saying he's not a real conservative, and he's advertising, certainly, in South Carolina. Here's a TV ad, new TV ad airing in South Carolina this week, where Fred Thompson, former U.S. Senator, touts his conservative credentials.
Friends, we're in a fight for our conservative values. I'm a conservative. Always have been. Always will be. I'll fight against amnesty and benefits for illegals. I'll work to keep your taxes low and keep a prosperous economy. I'm 100% pro-life. That's why South Carolina Citizens for Life endorse me. And you can trust me to protect our security against Islamic radicals. I'm Fred Thompson, and I approve this message because with your help, we can win this fight. I'd appreciate your vote Saturday.
Blease Graham, there's no end to the fascination here. What about this Huckabee-Thompson matchup? Of course, he said in the debate that, yes, Mike Huckabee would be a Christian leader, but he'd be a liberal on economic policy, a liberal on foreign policy. How is Huckabee's appeal apparently playing? Which face of Mike Huckabee's catching on? What maybe is not?
Well, I think on the level of personality, Governor Huckabee is quite appealing. I mean, he's done kind of a roadside campaign here, driven around the state, met a lot of people, has shaken a lot of hands, and people know him, I think, like him. The real difference, though, may be on the issues. I mean, I think people simultaneously like Senator Thompson. There's a certain, I don't know what the right term would be, gallantry about him. I mean, he looks quite impressive in that visual part of that, Ed, with his Stetson looking off to the west, I guess it would be.
No doubt.
So, I mean, he's making that kind of an appeal. But the real difference may be on the issues, that whether voters are going to be swayed more by personality and image or whether these issues are going to strike home. I mean, that's a virtual concert of conservative political issues in that Thompson ad. Mm.
Jamal Simmons will come to the Democratic face-off in Nevada after a little break here. But first, just give us a sense. I mean, you're a strategist for Democrats. You're with the Nevada Democratic Party. How these Democratic camps are watching the Republican race, split now three ways in the first three contests, and everybody still says it's a free-for-all. What do the Democrats make of how that's playing out, you know, as they look forward to the general?
Well, you know, the one thing that's true about this entire campaign, both from the Democratic and from the Republican side, is that, you know, if this were a basketball tournament, there's no sudden death this year. Each one of these states can be won or lost that Tuesday, and then you go into the next round the next week or a few days later, and then we'll see who wins that one. So this is going to be a long slog.
On and on it could go for both sides.
And I think for both sides, right now you've got three winners on the Republican side. And by the way, Mitt Romney is racking up delegates. He is probably going to win out here in Nevada because he's got a pretty good stake out here. There's a lot of Mormons out here, and he's the only one who's really competing other than Ron Paul. So, you know, Mitt Romney is actually doing pretty well.
Oh, boy. We're going to come back and look at how the Democratic contenders are doing in Nevada, where you've got a big labor interest, a big Latino population for the first time in this primary season. Jamal Simmons in Las Vegas, please stand by. Blaise Graham in Columbia, South Carolina. We'll be right back. We're talking about Mitt Romney's Michigan win and where things go now. Listeners, you can join us. Does the Romney campaign now have legs, appeal nationally? Can it keep on marching? And what happened to John McCain? Where was the straight talk magic in Michigan? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about Mitt Romney's Michigan win and the road ahead for the GOP and Democrats. In South Carolina and Nevada, this race is not over anywhere, really. You can join the conversation. Did you watch the Democrats' debate last night in Las Vegas? If you ran the craps table or cleaned rooms on the Strip, who would get your vote in Nevada? In South Carolina, how do you see the GOP field headed your way? Will Mitt play in Dixie? Is ex-POW McCain your military man? Will the Baptist vote do it for Mike Huckabee? What about Fred Thompson? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Jamal Simmons joins us from Las Vegas. He's a national media consultant to the Nevada Democratic Party. From Columbia, South Carolina, and the studios of ETV Radio, we're joined by Blaise Graham from the University of South Carolina. You can join us as well. 800-423-TALK. Right off the bat last night at the debate, sitting around a smaller table now, just Edwards, Obama, and Clinton, with Tim Russert talking with the candidates there moderating. It was all about getting over the racial stuff that's been in the wind this year. Here's Obama saying he regretted the way, well, people got kind of out there on a limb on the issue of race.
Our supporters, our staff get overzealous. They start saying things that I would not say. And it is my responsibility to make sure that we're setting a clear tone in our campaign. And I take that responsibility very seriously, which is why I spoke yesterday and sent a message in case people were not clear that what we want to do is make sure that we focus on the issues. Now, there are going to be significant issues that we debate and some serious differences that we have, and I'm sure those will be on display today. What I am absolutely convinced of is that everybody here is committed to racial equality, has been historically.
Everybody here is cool. Everybody's committed. It was Tim Russert and Brian Williams talking with these candidates. Russert, and we'll listen right here, asked Hillary Clinton if both she and Barack Obama and John Edwards, if all of them were prepared to be president.
Would you acknowledge that Senator Obama and Senator Edwards are both prepared to be president?
Well, I think that that's up to the voters to decide. I think that's something that voters have to make a decision about on all of us. They have to look at each and every one of us and imagine us in the Oval Office, imagine us as Commander-in-Chief, imagine us making tough decisions about everything we know we're going to have to deal with, and then all of the unpredictable events that come through the door of the White House and land on the desk of the president.
Jamal Simmons in Las Vegas, what issues appear to be playing in Nevada?
Well, out here, the issues really are about some of the bread and butter issues that most people in the West take on. That includes the environment. You know, the people here are very protective of the beautiful landscape and the mountains and water that's out here. The water issues are big as the population continues to grow in these fast-growing places. How do they keep water flowing into places like Las Vegas and other places? And then for the people who have water, you know, how much of it do they need to give up? There are issues of the Yucca Mountain was a big issue last night in the debate, and that's about whether or not we should have nuclear waste be stored in Yucca Mountain
right.
here in Nevada. So there's a lot of big issues that are on the table, and people talked about them last night. Obviously, immigration is a big issue here as well. There's a huge Hispanic population here with a lot of recent immigrants and family members who are either trying to get here or coming over, documented or undocumented. So this is a big issue. There's a lot of big issues here.
Jamal, what about the labor factor here? Culinary Union is very big in Las Vegas and on the Strip. No doubt a lot of Latino employees in that neck of the woods. Is that decisive? Could it be decisive for Barack Obama? How does that look?
It could be decisive. 70% of culinary, by many estimates, is Hispanic. But what's interesting is Hillary Clinton is generally the most popular politician among Hispanics and Latinos in the state of Nevada. So she does have some built-in popularity advantage, while Barack Obama has an organizational boost from the union. What's tough is the union waited a little late to make their endorsement. So some of the organizing efforts may be a little cramped. And meanwhile, John Edwards, the last poll here said the race was 32-30-27 with John Edwards at 27 and Clinton at 30.
That's so really clustered up there, really bunched.
Clustered up. John Edwards is popular with workers. He spent a couple of years out here after the 2004 election working with the unions, organizing with the unions, sitting in on negotiations. So he is sort of popular with the rank-and-file membership as well. So this is really going to be anybody's race. But what's dangerous, what's going on, is the Nevada State Teachers Association, the teachers here, are suing to stop the at-large precincts that we set up down on the Strip to make sure that we could have the Hispanic workers, many of the Hispanic workers who work in the hotels and restaurants down the Strip, be able to caucus because it's the middle of the day on Saturday, and you know, Las Vegas is a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week economy.
So they could caucus at work, essentially, and the teachers are suing to stop that. How does that look?
Well, it looks like I think we're going to be in court on Thursday, and that will be decided, but we feel like we're in very solid ground. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that parties are private organizations that could allocate their delegates however they want to, and this is a pretty established way of doing it. We picked an objective standard, and everybody had a chance. Last May, everyone had a chance to see what these rules are, so the time for comment on this has passed. If someone had a problem with it, they should have made that distinction a long time ago.
Well, so you say, but it's in the courts, and the race is real, both in Nevada and in South Carolina. Let's take a call from Columbia, South Carolina. Karen, you're on the air.
And a special hello to Bleas Graham, my former professor.
Oh, great, great. What do you see there, Karen?
About 20 minutes before your show started, I was called as part of a push poll that was done on behalf of, but without the authorization of, Governor Huckabee. I had heard about this, actually, earlier on an NPR interview with Governor Huckabee where he was asked about it, and he talked about how unfortunate it was.
What was the poll pushing, Karen? What was the character of it?
It was pushing Governor Huckabee as the real, true, serious, far-right conservative in contrast to all the others. First of all, it was a robo-poll. That is, there was no actual human being there.
But it was a real pro-Huckabee call, not one trying to undercut him, and it was trying to present him as the true conservative?
Each of the other significant candidates was presented in terms of a very negative fact about them. For example, Governor Romney raised taxes. Senator McCain did not support the Bush tax cuts. And Fred Thompson had been paid off by a far-left pro-abortion group in the past. These were presented as fact about the other candidates. And then I was asked if I would be more inclined to support Governor Huckabee since he was the true conservative candidate.
And Karen, how did you respond? Did you respond? What do you see in these candidates?
Well, I'm a yellow dog. I'm a yellow dog Democrat.
Wrong house.
But I wanted to hear what was being said. I thought it was very interesting how aggressive the poll was and how much it would push someone if they were poorly informed about the candidates. And so I wanted to present to your panelists, first of all, do you think that Governor Huckabee will be able to separate himself from this kind of push polling because it's very aggressive and it might turn off many voters?
Yeah.
And second of all, do you think South Carolina is more likely in terms of its Republican primary voters to be affected by this kind of push polling?
Karen, thanks. Bleas Graham, tough campaigning down there. That's not news from South Carolina. What about push polling?
Not. Yeah. Well, it's roughly, a 72-hour window between what a candidate really has or can reasonably expect as a constituency. And the question is, how many new supporters can be added here in what is now, 60 hours to go? And I guess the expectation is with a good campaign organization, one can add 10, 15,000 votes a day. So there may be enough voters in play for a very sharp elbow practice campaign techniques to have some work or to have some effect immediately. So and it may not be enough time to trace down who actually is doing it. I think another thing, too, is that the conservative community, as I see it, evangelicals particularly, is it very well organized? I mean, in a past decade, there was the Christian Coalition that spoke with a kind of unified voice. I don't think that's happening today, and that puts more pressure on specific campaigns like Governor Huckabee's.
To carry his own water there. Let's get a call from Des Moines, Iowa. Joe, you're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm part Hispanic and kind of lean into the Hispanic camp.
Okay.
When it comes to voting, I'm also a Democrat. And when we caucused here for the Democratic candidates, I ended up caucusing for Hillary Clinton, and there was a number of reasons that I did that. And one of the two main reasons is that Hillary has been waging her campaign unofficially for a number of years now, and she's held up pretty nicely to the forces that are anti-Hillary Clinton and has responded well to that type of political rhetoric that's been coming at her for a number of years, actually.
So she looks tough to you, tough and experienced.
Oh, yeah, of course she does. And she's able to, you know, if her missteps have been few and far between.
Joe, let me ask you about, you say you vote kind of out of the Hispanic camp there. When you look at Obama, what do you see? Do you see a minority candidate for president who kind of carries the flag for minorities generally? Do you see an African-American who's a minority but not in your camp? Or is that immaterial to you, the race question everybody now wants to put aside?
I do not see Obama as anything but a person who's asserting himself to be president. I don't think that Senator Obama is at this point in time qualified to take on such a venture as to be president, and the last couple of days have pretty much proved that in the miscues from his campaign, because as far as his flap over race is that if his organization, as young as it is, his national organization, that is, and not just his local senatorial organization, is starting to get out of control and he's losing track of it, that's an indication that his organization's not quite up to snuff.
So no sympathy there from Joe in Des Moines. I guess we got a lot of organizations at work here. But there's one. Joe, thanks for your call. Let me get Ron Brownstein in our conversation. He joins us from Washington. He's political director for Atlantic Media Publishers of The Atlantic, The National Review, Hotline. Ron Brownstein, always good to hear from you. Thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be back.
So look at Obama, and we've got this ethnic piece now in Nevada, particularly in Las Vegas, a big Latino vote. Are people expecting that to break for Obama or against Obama? What's the African-American Hispanic interplay here?
Well, in the long term, the Latino vote is a big challenge for him. Las Vegas and Nevada could be a unique situation because of his support from the Culinary Workers Union, which, of course, has many Latino members, although I can tell you from having been out a couple years ago with them door-to-door trying to register voters, they had a lot of trouble with that because even those who were here legally, many of them had not become citizens. Nonetheless, the Latino vote is really one of the wild cards going forward in this Democratic race. It's going to matter in a lot of places, California particularly. And, you know, one of the basic divides in this race so far, and we've talked about this in 2007, Obama does best among voters who approach politics as a way to express their values. Mm-hmm. Clinton has done best among voters who see it as a way to defend their interests. Obama has a lot of support among more upscale, sort of knowledge class white voters who are attracted to the statement that he makes, both in terms of domestic politics and internationally. Clinton has done better with kind of bread and butter voters, and Latino voters tend to fall into that latter category. So beyond any ethnic tensions, which are real in some places, I think there's kind of it kind of ties into a larger challenge he faces, which is to improve his performance among blue-collar, kind of bread-and-butter, lunch-pail voters, especially at a time when the economy is rising in importance for voters in both parties.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Jamal Simmons in Las Vegas, for all that, Obama got the Culinary Union backing in the race there in Nevada. They have a lot of Latino members. How did he secure that? What was their calculus? Why did this big, important union in Nevada go to Barack Obama?
Well, I don't think it was any accident that they didn't make the decision until after Iowa and New Hampshire had already expressed their opinions. I think the Culinary Union was probably looking to see who they thought of the big three had a good chance of winning and that maybe they could make a difference for.
He lost in New Hampshire, though. He lost in New Hampshire, though.
But he won in Iowa, and he came in close to New Hampshire.
Yep.
And I think for their benefit, this looks like it's going to be a long, hard slog. And the good news here is, whether it's Nevada or anywhere else, it looks like more people in the country will actually get to have a say about who's going to be the president than they have in the last couple of contests. And that sounds like a good development to me.
Let's get a call from Jennifer in Woburn, Massachusetts. Jennifer, you're on the air.
Hello. In the interest of full disclosure, I will say, living in Massachusetts and being a Mormon, I feel like I wanted to give Mitt Romney a good shake, but it wasn't until recently that I really started to support him, and that's because at the end of the day, what matters a lot to me and to my family is how deeply is the federal government going to reach into my pocket? And it seems like when you're getting your paycheck and when you're balancing your family's budget, really that's what affects us the most. And I'm starting to feel like it's Mitt Romney who is going to reach the least amount into my finances with taxes and with other programs. And I wanted to get the opinion of your panelists if they agreed with that or if they thought would reach the least deeply into the pockets of the American middle class.
Jennifer, thanks for that. And Mitt Romney getting you on tax policy and maybe a kind of a small government message there. Blease Graham, is that playing for Romney in South Carolina, and how does he stack up with the other Republican candidate?
I think it certainly does, particularly above.
Sounds like we may have lost Blease there for a moment. Ron Brownstein, what about Mitt Romney on this front? I'll keep your taxes low.
It has been a rough cycle for economic conservatives in the Republican Party. The Club for Growth, which is a conservative political action mm-hmm. committee that sort of is the voice, probably the premier voice of economic conservatives, has issued white papers that are extremely critical of Mike Huckabee, extremely critical of John McCain, and kind of equivocal on Mitt Romney. I mean, they're probably the most enthusiastic about Rudolph Giuliani, who has problems with social conservatives, and Fred Thompson, who hasn't had much of a pulse yet. Romney certainly is talking about tax cuts as a presidential candidate, Obviously, there was a sense that he was more open to fees as governor of Massachusetts. It's one of many areas where his record in Massachusetts is a bit of a tripwire over him at the national level. But there's no doubt that he is, he is a candidate of consolidation at the moment. He very much started off his campaign trying to sort of consolidate and basically embody all of the dominant positions among the various slices of the right, and at the end of the George Bush presidency.
Try to bring that Reagan coalition back if you can, but it's not easy this year. We've got to take a short break. Ron Brownstein in Washington, Jamal Simmons in Las Vegas, Lise Graham in South Carolina, please stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Mitt Romney's Michigan win and the road ahead for the GOP and Democrats in South Carolina and Nevada. This race is not over. It's not over anywhere. And we're eager to hear just how you see it. What do you think? Were you with Romney in Michigan? Do you think he's got what it takes to go national in this election? And what about the Obama Clinton-Edwards campaign fight going forward? First up on that front in Nevada, Jamal Simmons joins us from Las Vegas, national media consultant to the Nevada Democratic Party there. Ron Brownstein's with us from Washington, political director for the National Journal, the Atlantic Hotline. Lise Graham is with us from the studios of ETV Radio in Columbia, South Carolina, at the University of South Carolina. He's a professor of political science there. Right now, Mike is calling from Georgetown, South Carolina. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Pretty good. What do you think, Mike?
My question to you and your guests would be the famous independent voters, the ones that put Ronald Reagan into the office, and I guess for that matter, Bill Clinton. My concern is 6-7 months from now. I'm not sure if Romney has the ability to pick up the independent voters. And for that matter, on the Democratic side, it seems like Obama would, and it seems like Giuliani would, but that's my concern. What's their opinion 6-7 months from now? Who out of these on both sides is going to pick up the independent voters?
Let's hear from all three of our guests on just that point. Jamal Simmons, first to you. Independents, where do you see them in this race? And here's a question that goes right across party lines, because by definition, they can break either way. Which way? For who?
Well, it seems right now we saw in Iowa, independents seem to go for Obama and Senator Obama and the Iowa caucuses on the Democratic side. And in New Hampshire, there was a contest between Barack Obama and John McCain for independents. I think they got the lion's share of those independents. So going forward, Hillary Clinton seems to be more popular with hardcore Democrats, committed Democrats. Barack Obama is more popular with younger Democrats, independents, and some moderate Republicans.
Lise Graham, look at the Republican lineup for us when it comes to attracting independents. John McCain, famous for having done that in past elections. What about this time out?
That's for sure. I mean, attracting the independent voter is Senator McCain's strength. Is an interesting question in South Carolina to me, and that's a process question with primaries on different days. The independent voter is in a little bit of a quandary. If an independent voter is attracted to McCain and votes, then that voter is not going to be able to vote in a Democratic primary. So there's going to have to be a choice one way or the other. Among independents as to which primary to participate in. So there's a little bit of a dilemma in that respect. I do think, though, that Republican candidates generally are making more of an appeal to the older independents, whereas Obama is recruiting the newer voter who perhaps hasn't had party identification into the folds of the Democratic Party in South Carolina.
And Ron Brownstein, look a little bit further out. Our caller says, what about in six or 7 months here? First of all, who's it going to matter the most for, the Democrats' candidate or the Republicans? If the Republicans' Reagan coalition is breaking up a little bit, does that make them need independents more this time? How do you look at that? And who seems best positioned to harvest there?
Well, in 2004, Republicans, self-identified Republicans and Democrats constituted an equal share of the vote on Election Day, so independents matter equally to both of them. And the backdrop, as your callers, I think, might have suggested, is, in fact, that independents have soured enormously on President Bush. His popularity with them was always equivocal, but his approval rating among them over the last really 2.5 years has rarely peaked above 30-35%, and we saw what that translated into in the 2006 election, a sharp turn by independents toward Democrats, which was the margin of victory in the House races nationally. They voted 57-39 for Democrats, and in most of the key Senate races, Democrats amassed enormous advantages. So the question really is, which of the Democrats is capable of harvesting what is a generic advantage at this point? And you do see, some striking poll numbers. As I said, if you ask people on a generic basis, do they want a Democrat or Republican to win in 2008? Yep. Independents picked Democrats by about 15 to 20 points. Hillary Clinton hasn't been able to run a lead anything like that against several of the leading Republicans, particularly John McCain. Obama generally does better among independents. We've seen that in these first two contests, as does McCain. I mean, the challenge is, in the end, on both sides, the party nominee is probably going to be picked, is going to be picked primarily by partisans of that party. And for John McCain, the challenge is to move beyond independents and to get more Republicans to vote for him. That's a challenge he couldn't meet in 2000. For Obama, it's the same thing. If Hillary Clinton is winning core Democrats in state after state, even with his strength among independents, she'll probably be the nominee. The paradox, of course, is the candidate who's better among independents is probably the stronger general election nominee.
Please, what about the Republican, the right-wing radio, Rush Limbaugh, and that crowd going very hard for Romney recently? Rush Limbaugh quoted today saying, talking about McCain and Huckabee, I'm here to tell you if either of these two guys get the nomination, it's going to destroy the Republican Party. How does that message play in South Carolina, and does it work for Romney or Thompson?
Well, it may wake up some Republican voters who may have perhaps been thinking about just sitting out this primary, and it may increase Republican turnout. And I think that's going to be one of the interesting measures, at least in this state, as to the potential for Republican success among either independents or potentially apathetic Republicans who haven't really been turned on by any message and see these persons as cue givers to get in there and make a difference in the nomination.
Let's go to Jay calling from Burlington, Iowa. Hi, Jay, you're on the air.
Yeah, I would say that earlier caller that said the mistakes were far and few between for Hillary, they were so numerous after the minute she got down in the polls, it was just like one stink bomb after another. And, you know, I'm looking at their campaigns about what kind of president they're going to be. They have just went on the total attack against everything. You know, the smallest thing, like last night they asked, I guess, whatever habit you have that you'd like to change, and I guess Obama said, not always as organized.
The candidates were asked about their greatest strengths and greatest weaknesses. Edwards and Clinton kind of said, they didn't really give a weakness. Obama said, I could be better organized sometime, that's why I have good staff around me.
And he said, he said, well, you know, George Bush is always on time and the CEO. He could have said, your husband is on Clinton time. Your husband is not, but he couldn't do that. And by the way, there's so many fascinating things like the gender and race card. I think Obama has totally had grace in class. She uses her woman card every single, I mean, you know, and I don't want nobody to use it against her, but I mean, she uses it in her favor over, it's so obnoxious. And we saw over and over how many times that the way, whenever she gets down in a poll, or she just will go on ballistic. She can't let up. And by the way, there's all the youth votes going to go down the tubes. Who wears well, like David Gergen said? You know, I mean, that's part of a president.
The youth vote goes down the tubes if what? If it's Hillary, not Barack?
Yeah, Barack is the main reason. I mean, in my caucus and many others, so many more independents, so many more young people than we've ever seen before.
Well, Jay, we've got it. We're still hearing that Iowa energy for Barack Obama, Jamal Simmons. What about in Nevada? That's where the train's going next. First of all, on the whole race flap of the last week, they tried to put it to bed, to put it away last night. Will it go away?
Well, here's an interesting statistic from yesterday in Michigan. Hillary Clinton was the only Democrat on the ballot in Michigan, the only major Democrat who's still running, except for Dennis Kucinich.
Because of the whole flap about Michigan pushing its vote up early in the Democratic Party, cracking down on it, yeah.
That's right, and so there are no delegates at stake here. But one thing that's very interesting is Hillary Clinton lost the city of Detroit, which is primarily African-American, to uncommitted. It looks like about 69 or 70% of African-Americans voted uncommitted in the primary yesterday. Hillary Clinton got got the balance, got about 22%. So that's a really interesting development for her going into South Carolina, and it probably shows, one, African-Americans have rallied around Barack Obama just because he has proven to be an African-American candidate that white voters will vote for. But two, the last few weeks of really, frankly, outrageous behavior on behalf of the Clinton campaign in terms of these issues of race going back into December, that there has been that has taken its toll in the African American community, and it looks like she's paying some cost for that. It'll be interesting to see how that develops going forward.
Outrageous, clearly in the eye of the beholder, from what we've heard in the last couple of days here. But we hear that,
frankly, if the beholder's African Americans, their eye seems to be on the outrageous side.
Ron Brownstein. You know, everybody talks about the Republican race being such a free-for-all, but how does it look to you on the Democratic side? Just as big a free-for-all right now? And is Edwards potentially still in it? We heard the early poll numbers, and who knows after New Hampshire, but he's clustered right up there with Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Is this still fully wide open on the Democrat side?
No, I think it is different on the Democratic side in that I think it is much more clarified. You have two clear front runners. I think Edwards is could influence the result, but is unlikely to be a major competitor for the nomination. You have two clear front runners in Obama and Clinton who have established very defined bases of support at this point. Obama has run, as we've talked about, best among more upscale, college-educated, and younger white voters, independents, with this new element that none of the candidates in that lane before has had. As Jamal said, he's adding to that a significant, potentially significant appeal among African-American voters. One way to think about it is he's sort of combining some portion of the Gary Hart and Jesse Jackson constituencies from 84. And then you have Hillary Clinton, who is strongest with seniors, non-college Democrats, especially women, and less affluent voters and women overall, kind of a very traditional Democratic coalition. In many ways, the Democratic Party that existed before her husband came along and helped move it upscale into the suburbs in the 90s. So if they can hold this support, which I think that to a large degree they will, you can sort of walk through the states, and they're both going to win a bunch of them on February 5th. It's hard for me to see a knockout blow one to the other at that point, although I do think the longer it goes on, the calendar kind of bends toward Hillary Clinton states. I look as far down the road as March 4th when you have Ohio and Texas, two downscale states. If she can put together a Latino vote with her blue-collar vote and prevent that from bleeding away to him, I think she probably has the advantage, but it's not guaranteed. Obama is a very formidable candidate, and no one really has assembled the exact sort of coalition that he may have in these next few primaries, so we don't really know how it stacks up against the more traditional coalition that Hillary Clinton is putting together.
And if Edwards doesn't turn it around, somehow grab a victory here and get really fully back in the game, if he should at some point, you know, be out of this race, what does that mean? Where do his supporters go? Is it clear? Do they divide them up 50-50 or what?
Well, his demographic support outside of Iowa has been remarkably flat, prairie flat. I mean, he basically is drawing about equally upscale, downscale, moderate to liberal men, women. So in that sense, I don't think it is going to break decisively one for the other. I mean, his message very much makes him a competitor for that kind of working class support that Hillary Clinton is relying on. But his actual vote profile, at least outside of Iowa, hasn't followed that pattern. So I don't think it would have a big effect. The bigger question is whether Obama can do elsewhere what he did in Iowa, which was encroach on Hillary Clinton's terrain. Another group to watch, by the way, I would point out, is a very cross-pressure constituency, is college-educated women, Hillary Clinton's peers. There are a lot of them in the Democratic Party. They're women, which sort of pulls them toward her, but they are more upscale, kind of post-grad, post-material voters, which pulls them toward him. And they go back and forth in the polling, and I think they're going to be very much a group in play, state by state, and we'll see. I think they could tip some of these states, such as potentially even California.
Let's hear from South Carolina again. That's exactly where the Republican train's going. Fred's calling from Aiken, South Carolina. Hi, Fred. You're on the air.
Tom.
Hi.
Appreciate you taking the call.
Sure.
Just kind of an interesting point. Mitt Romney was actually here in Aiken before he actually announced and gave his stump speech at a Rotary Club that I belong to.
What'd you think?
And I heard him on Meet the Press here not very long ago with Tim Russert. And I was taken, my wife and I were both taken with the fact that he has, in fact, changed his position on many issues, and they're quite understandable, and since he was running in a Republican, a very liberal state in Massachusetts. But instead of saying that, I've made those changes, he just would simply say anything to avoid owning up to it, which I found very disturbing. And I just think to myself, is this somebody that you can trust if he's willing to say anything to be elected?
Please, Graham, there it is, straight from Fred. This sort of, and two things have come up from callers here, one directly here. Romney's had a couple of reps, one saying, you know, can a Mormon be elected president? The other that, you know, he'll say anything to be elected. How do those appear to be playing, received in South Carolina?
I think that's been part of Governor Romney's problem in South Carolina, an image problem of character, trust, believability, and it's been exploited by his political opponents. He's given reassurances, but it's going to be a matter of how convincing those reassurances are when the Republicans actually get into their primary.
Ron, in Michigan, Mitt Romney said, you know, John McCain said some of these jobs are not coming back. That was his version of straight talk, maybe impolitic. Mitt Romney said, we're going to get these jobs back, said, you know, he'd try and do away with tougher fuel economy standards to help do that. Is that straight talk from Mitt Romney, or is that a pie in the sky?
I remember Bill Clinton in 1992 in Flint, Michigan, at a primary event telling voters these jobs would not be coming back. No, clearly, I think John McCain was closer to reality. And of course, as the Boston Globe reported this week, Mitt Romney kind of hit yet another tripwire on his record in that he condemned the higher fuel economy standards, but as governor, joined with California's effort to reduce greenhouse emissions from cars, which would have required higher fuel economy standards. Look, Mitt Romney, the advantage that he has in this race is he has had the broadest appeal so far in the Republican race. He's run well among Republicans. He's carried them now in New Hampshire and self-identified Republicans in New Hampshire and Michigan. But he's also had some competitiveness among independents. He's done reasonably well with moderates and well with conservatives. He's the only candidate right now who looks like more than a niche candidate. The problem he's got is these various limitations that are out there, these barriers in terms of doubts about whether he believes what he's saying, concerns about his religious faith among some of the socially conservative elements of the party. But overall, I would say his hand is better than it seems, I think, because he is at least drawing from different pools in the party, and usually the winner is someone who can do that. Right now, McCain is a creature of moderates only. Huckabee is a creature of evangelical conservatives only. His support among non-evangelicals registers in trace amounts. And Rudy Giuliani and Fred Thompson haven't proved they can compete anywhere. I would sort of give Romney a very limited edge, but it is kind of in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man right now.
Well, all eyes on the GOP in South Carolina this weekend and on the Democrats in Nevada. I want to thank all of you for being with us. Ron Brownstein in Washington, always great to speak with you. Thanks for joining us, Ron.
Glad to be here again.
Jamal Simmons in Las Vegas. We'll be watching right along with you, Jamal. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Blease Graham at the University of South Carolina. Thank you for joining us, Blease.
You're welcome.
A big, warm welcome to new On Point listeners in Western Virginia today on WMRA Harrisonburg and member stations in Charlottesville, Farmville, Lexington, Winchester. Welcome to the conversation. And listeners all over the country, especially those who hear us in the evening in places like Memphis, Austin, Madison, Seattle, Juneau, Alaska, New York, Washington, many more, we may not be able to take your calls on air, but we know you're out there listening, and it's great to have you. You can join the conversation, listen live online, and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals, institutions, and advisors reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.